150,000 people in London and 1.5 million people in Italy a few weekends ago demonstrated against any attack on Iraq, suppressed by all five big TV networks. But all five big TV networks have tried to distract you by showing endless reruns of OJ details and Madam Toogood swatting her child. Who runs the big media? For the full story, go to realnews247.com and click on Who Runs the Media, and email your contacts nationwide to go to realnews247.com.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com to find out first, and on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live...
Good evening, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, all across America and around the world on the Internet. This is Darren Weeks, and welcome to tonight's edition of American Exposé. I'll be sitting in for Chris Gerner for the next couple of hours, and I'm glad that you're joining us tonight, as I have a lot of good information to be sharing with you tonight. I believe information about the crisis that we face here in America. It's certainly a depressing situation to know the truth from time to time. Chris has taken the night off, and sometimes you just got to get away. Sometimes you have to pull back a little bit and take a breather. But certainly we don't take a break from trying to wake up our fellow Americans to the problems that we face. We face a very dire circumstance here in this country in which we live. We have communists in control of our government. Ladies and gentlemen, we have all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto that have been implemented here in this country. We have communism being implemented around the world, only they're calling it democracy. Democracy. It's a bad situation. It's a terrible situation, and it's imperative that we all get involved, do what we can, to try to make a difference for the cause of liberty. And that's what it boils down to. It's because of our parents and their parents, to a large degree, being asleep, not being involved, that this thing has gotten so far. But this has gone on for a long time, ladies and gentlemen. This plan for world domination, world communism, has been in work. They've been working on this plan for a long time, as you're going to see hopefully tonight. There's been soldier abuse in Iraq, we're told. These pictures that have come out of the Middle East, I believe these pictures are designed, the scandal is designed to make the U.S. look bad, to create animosity against us around the world. This is a big problem. We have our soldiers all around the world, anywhere from 120 countries to 141, depending upon the source that's giving the information. We're thinly stretched around the world. There's a number of UN operations going on, and all of this is an attempt to establish a one-world government. Now, that's not conspiracy theory. That is a fact. If you do your own research, you find out this information for yourself, verify what I'm saying. Spend some time on the United Nations website. Find out what they're about. We have to get involved. We have to educate ourselves, and we have to educate others as quickly and as rapidly as possible. We all have to be evangelists for the truth. Evangelists for the truth. We have to be stewards for the truth. It is not by accident that you folks out there are listening to this network and to this broadcast. It is of utmost importance that we all spread the word to as many as will hear, because it's the future of our children, the future of future generations, that will matter. And I believe we're going to see something happen, something major happen within our lifetime. I was reading earlier from Foreign Affairs, January-February 2004 edition, Allison or Graham Allison writes about how to stop nuclear terror. And I'm not going to read you the whole piece because most of it, frankly, is BS. Most of the stuff these people say is BS. But he says, President George W. Bush has singled out terrorist nuclear attacks on the United States as the defining threat the nation will face in the foreseeable future. In addressing this specter, he has asserted that Americans, quote, highest priority is to keep terrorists from acquiring weapons of mass destruction, end quote. So far, however, Graham Allison continues, his words have not been matched by deeds. The Bush administration has yet to develop a coherent strategy for combating the threat of nuclear terror. Although it has made progress on some fronts, Washington has failed to take scores of specific actions that would measurably reduce the risk to the country. Unless it changes course and fast, a nuclear terrorist attack on the United States will be more likely than not in the decade ahead. So let me ask you listeners out there a question. What do they have planned for us in the next 10 years? What do they have planned for us in the next 10 years? We have the military out of this country. We have our military around the world. We have the borders wide open for the most part. We have illegal immigrants flooding in from Mexico. We are entangled financially with communist China. Our industrial backbone has been broken. This is a situation where we have the enemy is inside the gates, folks. The enemy is inside the gates. And I'm not trying to be sensationalistic here. I'm not trying to exaggerate the situation in any way. I mean, all you have to do is just tell the truth. That's all you have to do. And these soldier abuse photos are just another example of how animosity is being created against the United States around the world. If we go to war with China, and certainly Russia would fight with China. They signed a friendship treaty in 2001. Who's going to fight alongside the United States? Who's going to feel sorry if we're invaded and our children are raped? Our women are raped and we're slaughtered in the streets. If there's a nuclear attack here, which undoubtedly would be orchestrated by the U.S. government in the same manner that the U.S. government did the September 11th attacks, who's going to feel sorry for us when we have our troops around the world and these photos are coming out, whether they're real or not? We're told they are. Can we believe what we're told? Can we believe the media? How do we know what we can believe? How do we know? I mean, this is the problem. And getting the average American to care, getting the average American to be concerned about their destiny and the destiny of their children, the destiny of their offspring. They're too busy drinking beer. They're too busy enjoying their sports. They're too busy watching their movies. They're too busy listening to their music. Somebody needs to start paying attention to this stuff. And those of us who are in the know, and I realize I'm preaching to the choir. I realize that those of you listening to this network are people who care. You wouldn't be listening otherwise. The kind of stuff that we disseminate on this network is certainly not entertainment. if this is what you think is entertainment, then you need psychological help, I guess. I don't find it entertaining, but you have a concern for the truth. You want to know what's going on, and that's noble. That's admirable. We have to find a way to break through to the masses. We have to get this information out in whatever capacity that we can, and that's the important thing. So I was thinking a lot about this situation in Iraq. Frankly, these photos really... They disturbed me quite a bit. And you wonder how anybody could even engage in an activity like that. The Village Voice did a piece on
Pardon me while I wait for my computer here. I guess I'm going to have to shut that off. The Village Voice did a piece on the mind control, possible mind control that's going on. It's called The Guilt-Free Soldier. It's a January 22nd through 28th by Eric Baird. It says, a soldier faces a drab cluster of buildings off a broken highway where the enemy is encamped among civilians. Local farmers and their families are routinely forced to fill the basements and shacks, acting as human shields for weapons that threaten the lives of other civilians. The soldier's comrades and his cause in this messy 21st century war. There will be no surgical strikes tonight. The artillery this soldier can unleash with a single command to his mobile computer will bring flame screaming, deafening blasts, and unforgettably acrid air. The ground around him will be littered with broken bodies of women and children, and he'll have to walk right through them. Every value he has learned as a boy tells him to back down, to return to base and find another way of routing the enemy. Or, he reasons, he could complete the task and rush back to start popping pills that can, over the course of 2 weeks, immunize him against a lifetime of crushing remorse. He draws one last clean breath and fires. Pills like those won't be available to the troops heading off for possible war with Iraq. How do we know that? How do we know that? How do we know that they're not taking those kind of pills? But the prospect of a soul absolved by meds remains very real. Feelings of guilt and regret travel neural pathways in a manner that mimics the tracings of ingrained fear. So a prophylactic against one could guard against the other. Several current lines of research, some federally funded, show strong promise for this. Yeah, of course they're federally funded. At the University of California at Irvine, experiments in rats indicate that the brain's hormonal reactions to fear can be inhibited, softening the formation of memories and the emotions they evoke. At New York University, researchers are mastering the means of short-circuiting the very wiring of primal fear. At Columbia University, one Nobel laureate's lab has discovered the gene behind the fear-inhibiting protein, uncovering a vision of fight or flight at the molecular level. In Puerto Rico, at the Ponce School of Medicine, scientists are discovering ways to help the brain unlearn fear and inhibitions by stimulating it with magnets. And at Harvard University, survivors of car accidents are already swallowing propanolol pills in the first human trials of that common cardiac drug as a means to nip the effects of trauma in the bud. The web of your worst nightmares, your hauntings and panics and shame, radiates from a dense knot of neurons called the amygdala. With each new frightening or humiliating experience, or even the reliving of an old one, this fear center triggers a release of hormones that sear horrifying impressions into your brain. That which is unbearable becomes unforgettable, too, unless it seems you act quickly enough to block traumatic memories from taking a stranglehold. Some observers say that in the name of human decency, there are some things people should have to live with. They object to the idea of medicating away one's conscience. Dr. Leon Cass, chairman of the President's Council on Bioethics, who emphasizes that he's speaking as an individual and not on the behalf of the council, says it's a morning after pill for just about everything that produces regret, remorse, pain, or guilt. Barry Romo, a national coordinator for Vietnam Veterans Against the War, is even more blunt. He says that's the devil pill. That's the monster pill, the anti-morality pill. That's the pill that can make men and women do anything and think they can get away with it. Even if it doesn't work, what's scary is that a young soldier could believe it will. The article asks, are we ready for an infamous Nuremberg plea? I was just following orders to be made easier with pharmaceuticals. Though the research so far has been limited to animals and the most preliminary of human trials, the question is now worth debating. If you have, quote, if you have the pill, it certainly increases the temptation for the soldier to lower the standard for taking lethal action. If he thinks he'll be numbed, he'll be numb to the personal risk of consequences. We don't want soldiers saying, nilly-willy, screw it, I can take a pill. And even if doing this is not really warranted, I'll be okay, says psychiatrist Edmund G. Howe, director of the Program on Medical Ethics at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. He says, if soldiers are going to have that lower threshold, we might have to build an even stronger safeguards than we have right now against, say, blowing away human shields. We'll need higher standards of proof that the action is justified. Well, I would suggest to you that if they don't care about human life, they're not going to care about your standards. The scientists behind this advance into the shadows of memory and fear don't dream of creating morally anesthetized grunts. They're trying to fend off post-traumatic stress disorder, they say, or PTSD, so that women who've been raped can leave their houses without feeling like targets, so that survivors of terrorist attacks can function, raise families, and move forward, and yes, so that those young soldiers aren't left shattered for decades by what they've seen and done in service. Oh, man. Combat and psychoactive chemicals have always been inseparable, whether the agent was alcohol or a space-age pill. A half century after Japan hopped its soldiers up on methamphetamines during World War II, the U.S. has pilots currently in the dock for mistakenly bombing Canadian troops while using speed to stay awake. When Eric Kandel, the Nobel laureate in medicine, who works out of Colombia, was asked if his genetic exploration of fear was funded by the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, he quipped, no, but you're welcome to call them and tell them about me. Imagine a world where the same pill soothed victims and perpetrators alike. Henry David Thoreau advised, make the most of your regrets, never smother your sorrow. To regret deeply is to live afresh. Without remorse, there would have been no John Newton, a slave trader who found religion during a harrowing storm at sea and later became an abolitionist. He's best known for penning Amazing Grace. For doctors, the drugs would present a tricky dilemma. Most people exposed to traumatic situations don't end up with post-traumatic stress disorder, but there are a few means of knowing on the spot who might need treatment much further down the line. Researchers say that for the medicines to be effective, patients would need to take them soon enough after the upsetting event. The temptation for physicians might be to err on the side of caution at the cost of curbing normal emotional responses. Victims might be eager to avoid lasting pain, wrongdoers the full sting of self-examination. Cass says, the impulse is to help people to not fall apart. You don't want to condemn that, but you would, but that you would treat these things with equanimity, the horrible things of the world, so that they don't disturb you, you'd cease to be a human being. The very idea of post-traumatic stress disorder has been attacked as a social construction, a vague catch-all that provides exculpation for the misdeeds of war. But researchers are trying to prevent the onset of a disease, not change the social circumstances that bring it about. James L. McGow, a neurologist at UC Irvine, whose study of stress hormones and memory consolidation in rats is one of the cornerstones of the effort, acknowledges the ambiguities, but comes out swinging in defense of his work. He says, is it immoral to weaken the memory of horrendous acts a person has committed? Well, I suppose one might make that case. Some of your strongest memories are of embarrassments and of the guilty things you did. It doesn't surprise me at all that people would wake up screaming thinking of the young children they killed in Vietnam, McGow says, but is treating that worse than saying, don't worry if your leg is shot off, we've got penicillin and surgery to prevent you from dying of infection? Why is it any worse to give them a drug that prevents them from having post-traumatic stress disorder for the rest of their lives? The moral dilemma is sending people to war in the first place. Well, the last sentence I have to agree with, especially when the war isn't for what the global elite are saying it's for. Nevertheless, fellow fear researcher, Dr. Gregory Quirk of the Ponce School of Medicine in Puerto Rico, is troubled by how his work might be used if it progressed from studies of rats to therapies for humans. He argues that fear isn't created and degraded in the amygdala alone, but is also unlearned in the prefrontal cortex, which in post-traumatic stress disorder patients is only weakly active. Quirk thinks a physician could stimulate those areas with magnets, while patients view the images they fear and could thus restore balance to the mind. With that same method, he says, firemen could stave off episodes of life-threatening panic. Certainly the military might be interested in something like that, he says. If this would be used to go against fear that's important for survival or morality, I would have a problem with that. There are reasons to believe our military would covet mastery of Quirk's technique in humans. People at war dehumanize their enemies to make killing more palatable. Now, in the war on terror, our modern cultural taboos against torture are fraying. Put yourself in the room, then. The commission of heinous acts, even deliberate torture, can also visit lifelong torment on perpetrators who aren't hardwired well to be sadistic. The sounds of screaming, primordial alert that mortal danger is near, trigger those damning hormones even in the torturer. And couple Quirk's magnetic manipulation of the brain with this. One of the horrible things I discovered, he says, this is a quote, after the Gulf War was that because of the co-education of wars, as it were, male soldiers were given extensive desensitization training to make them able to hear women being raped and tortured in the next room without breaking. He continues, it's a deformation of the soul of the First Order. I cannot speak about it without outrage. But a trauma born irrational aversion to necessary war, pacifism in the face of an expanding evil, well, that isn't healthy either. Such emotions can blind us as well as make us wiser, says Howe. It's a possible thing that these kinds of drugs would help patients see in a clearer way. On the flip side, could anyone possibly maintain that Ahab was a better captain for not having been chemically mollified after the white whale bit off his leg? An uncomfortable reality is that war isn't an aberration. It has a very codified place in our culture. Oh, man. We agreed through treaties to normalize it. We demand punishment for soldiers who violate those treaties, though more often those from the losing side. But we don't deny them medical treatment, and one needn't have committed a war crime to feel racked by sorrow. In my dreams, Romo says, I meet six Vietnamese people I murdered. Whether they had a gun on them is irrelevant. Romo is a 19-year-old lieutenant, served as a platoon leader, served in the 196th Light Infantry Brigade in 1967 and 1968. His ticket home as a body escort, he was a body escort for his similarly aged nephew who served in the same unit. He says, I returned to the United States on my nephew's dead body. Romo and veterans like him have taken it upon themselves to use their experiences to teach peace. But veterans torn apart by post-traumatic stress disorder don't have a choice about being Exhibit A in the case against war. When you see what can happen to a young person, it passes on in a very real way, not in a history class sense, that the reality of war and blood, what it really is, he says. Who are we to impose this emotional albatross on soldiers? As a nation, we elect our leaders. Well, do we really, folks? Do we really? It seems unjust to make veterans a special class to suffer for our sins in wrong-headed wars, or pay a continuing price for victory in the good ones. That's a heavy burden to put on people to preserve the morality you're talking about, says Dr. Roger K. Pittman of Harvard University, who's leading the he's leading the study in people fresh from car accidents. By that same logic, if you could make a lightweight, bulletproof garment for soldiers, we still shouldn't do it. For moral reasons, we ought to make them able to be shot, to preserve the cost of war, the deterrent to war. Well, see, that's the problem, though, is that the people who are orchestrating these wars don't care about the cost of war. That would imply that the only time that they care about the cost of war is when the average Joe Schmo watching Jerry Springer gets angry because their brother or somebody was killed. And if enough of those people get mad, then the government gets a little worried, those who operate the government and operate behind the scenes. But they don't care about human life. They want life to be reduced. They want life to be reduced on Earth to, what, 500 million? Well, I'm almost done with this article. I think I'm going to let it go. But the bottom line is, folks, experimentation has been going on in mind control since the 1960s, probably even before that. And how do we know what they're giving those soldiers in Iraq? How do we know? We don't. How do you get to the bottom of that? There's no way you can. Unless you know somebody who happens to be over there. And this whole thing is, every aspect of our lives is orchestrated. Folks, every aspect of our lives is being orchestrated for us. And it's coming from the United Nations. Iraq is a United Nations project. It's a United Nations operation. And don't give me this claptrap about how Bush went in against the will of the UN. That was all just window dressing. Iraq is a UN operation. There are a number of reasons that we need to get the United States out of the United Nations. If we can do this, we're so interwoven right now, it seems that the United States is the United Nations. We got to take a break here shortly. I don't want to get started on another. Folks, if you want to call in, by the way, the number is 1-800-858-6582. Again, the call-in number is 1-800-858-6582. I would love to hear your thoughts on this or anything else that's happening around. 1-800-858-6582. The website is AmericanExpose.com. www.AmericanExpose.com. American is spelled with a K, not a C. Go there. We have a lot of information that we've assembled. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. This is American Expose. I'm Darren Wood sitting in for Chip Sherman.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, You can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars, or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. 3, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening. Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for rebroadcast times. We'll see you then. You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us. Or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to American Exposé, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Darren Weeks, sitting in for Chris Gerner tonight. Chris should be back with you tomorrow night. Again, I want to give you the call-in number if you want to call. If you're listening out there, 1-800-858-6582. The website, AmericanExpose.com. American is spelled with a K and not a C. We're going to be adding some more information to the American Exposé website. We've been busy with a lot of different things. It's a juggling act, folks. It's a juggling act, but we're going to get back to it. And but the American Exposé, already in its present form, is an excellent research site. It's one of the few sites on the Internet that are telling the story about Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is the blueprint for sustainable development here in the United States, but also around the world. And this all fits into the communist goal of putting the means of production, which is the land, off limits to you. People are presently losing their land right now because of this agenda that's being put into place, this UN agenda. And most people don't even know about it. Very few people actually know that it's going on until it comes to their doorstep, until they're the ones who are being surrounded by national forests and their property is marked for eminent domain. And suddenly they find out, uh-oh, there's something going on here. But then it's too late. So go to the website, AmericanExpose.com, and do your own research. Find out about this. We link directly to the UN website and a number of situations, and you can read Agenda 21 right there. Getting back to the orchestration of the war. You know, I think it's important. I know most of you, if you've listened to this network for very long, you're very, very familiar with the fact that September 11th was an orchestrated event. This worldwide war on terror was orchestrated by the U.S. government and those operating within the shadows who control the U.S. government. And I think that most of you understand that. However, we have new listeners at some time to time, and I think it's very important that we from time to time touch on this so that people understand just where it's all coming from and where it's all going. There is an effort at implementing a one-world government. They call it a new world order. There is an outstanding amount of evidence that proves unequivocally, if you have just a slight open mind at all, if you don't have an open mind, you're not going to know anything. You don't have a chance to learn anything because you won't listen. And see, that's the problem. Is you try to talk to people about a lot of this stuff, they don't have an open mind about it. They just cannot believe that the media is lying to them. They cannot believe that the media is controlled. Yet they believe that other countries have their media. Other populations of people in other parts of the world are propagandized. But we have a government that has declared war upon us. And it's infiltrated with communists. And I'm not trying to be sensationalistic, folks. If you do your own research, you'll discover that. But here we see in The Guardian, out of the UK, and so much information. Their media is controlled, too, by the same people who control ours. However, information is reported over there that would be more detrimental to the globalist cause if it was reported over here. So they report it over there, but they don't report it here. But thanks to the Internet, which is available to us for how much longer, who knows. But thanks to the Internet, we can get a lot of this information that's reported over there. And this is one editorial that was printed in The Guardian. This war on terrorism is bogus. The 9/11 attacks gave the U.S. an ideal pretext to use force to secure its global domination. Michael Meeker writes in The Guardian. Michael Meeker, by the way, is Tony Blair's former environmental minister. So this is a cabinet member of the Blair administration. After he resigned from that administration, he came out and told, well, most of the truth about September 11th. Now been given, and rightfully so. I'm sorry, we got a caller? Okay, I didn't catch the name, but go ahead, caller.
Hi, Darren. This is Sam with the Information Corner broadcast. How are
you? Hey, Sam. Good to talk to you.
Well, it is nice to meet you for a change. I've heard a lot about you, and, of course, I've heard you working on Chris's side. I've heard, you know, Chris has told me, and, of course, I've been up there, and that side is just, man, what you've done to that side is just, it's a wonderful piece of work there. But I wanted to call and comment on, just to underscore what you're saying and what Chris has been saying, and that is the fact that for the importance of this Agenda 21, it's just amazing how few people we have actually out there covering it. Everywhere, in all the research criteria that we have done, everything, I mean, people would be amazed if they knew what was under Agenda 21. I mean, we went clear down into, my wife Trish was doing some research out in the living room on the laptop the other day and came up with, they even have codes on how print music is to be written, if you can believe that.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing, this stuff. I mean, almost, eventually they're going to have a code on how you're supposed to breathe, I'm afraid. It's where it's going. I mean, this is just how ridiculous it's getting. But this is a subject that nobody covers, and this is why it's so important that everybody take advantage of all these other shows and go and get a word in edgewise on this subject, because there are some talk show hosts out there that just run scared from this subject, and it's important, because if you don't hit the head of the snake, all you're going to be doing is stamping out little fires that are created, and you're not going to get to the bulk of it, and that's how this agenda moves forward, because everybody wants to cover the little brush fires that are created by it, but they don't want to cover where the real problem is.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is a command and control structure, and these people, they want it all, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they want to control every single thing you do. They want to own you, including everything you own, which, in effect, they already do when you get to the I mean, when you stop to think about the line of goods we've been sold with a fiat currency, with the international bankers at the helm, we're collateral in this country. Most people don't know that we're collateral along with everything we own.
Yeah, if you really
get down to the heart of it. And this is how they've gotten us on this. And most people have no idea what a fiat currency even is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 that was put into place. Yeah, people don't realize what real money is. We've never had real money, you know, in our lifetime. I was planning on covering something called the Banker's Manifesto.
Yes, that would be good.
You ever heard that?
I haven't heard that. I've certainly heard the Communist Manifesto, the goals and the planks, and that's enough, even right off the bat. But the Banker's Manifesto would be even interesting to hear as well.
Yeah, it was a document that was implemented in 1892. It was not intended for our eyes, of course.
Yeah.
But I stumbled upon this by accident. I was researching the Federal Reserve System for an article that I was writing, and just somehow stumbled upon this. And they mentioned the Omaha convention that was coming up in that same year.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, they were very adamant. In fact, let me see if I can call this up here.
It's a net article, or is it a net piece?
What are you asking?
Is it an internet piece? Is it something that'd be pulled off the net?
No, this is actually the actual document here.
Okay.
The Banker's Manifesto of 1892. It says, we, that is the bankers, must proceed with caution and guard every move made, for the lower order of people, how do you like that, are already showing signs of restless commotion. Prudence will therefore show a policy of apparently yielding to the popular will until our plans are so far consummated that we can declare our designs without fear of any organized resistance. Organizations in the United States should be carefully watched by our trusted men, and we must take immediate steps to control these organizations in our interest or disrupt them. At the coming Omaha Convention, to be held July 4th, 1892, our men must attend and direct its movement, or else there will be set on foot such antagonism to our designs as may require force to overcome. This, at the present time, would be premature. We are not yet ready for such a crisis. Capital must protect itself in every possible manner through combination, that word meaning conspiracy, and legislation. The courts must be called to our aid. Debts must be collected. Bonds and mortgages foreclosed as rapidly as possible. Now, one thing you have to understand is, at the time this went out, there was a great, well, it wasn't a Great Depression. It was what's called the Long Depression. There was a depression going on,
right,
which had started in the 1870s. Probably another orchestrated situation.
Yeah.
But they said the courts must be called to our aid. Debts must be collected, bonds and mortgages foreclosed as rapidly as possible. When through the process of law the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and easily governed through the influence of the strong arm of the government applied to a central power of imperial wealth under the control of the leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. History repeats itself in regular cycles. The truth is well known among our principal men who are engaged in forming an imperialism of the world. 1892, Sam. While they are doing this, the people must be kept in a state of political antagonism. The question of tariff reform must be urged through the organization known as the Democratic Party, and the question of protection with a reciprocity must be forced to view through the Republican Party. By thus dividing voters, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers to the common herd. Thus, by discrete actions, we can secure all that has been so generously planned and successfully accomplished. That was revealed by Congressman Charles A. Lindbergh, Sr. to the U.S. Congress, sometime during his term in 1907 to 1917.
Is there a web copy of that anywhere?
I got it. I can certainly post it.
Boy, that would be great. That needs to be, that's just another one of the many documents that needs to be out there for one and all to see. And, you know, the bottom line is, Darren, this is all hidden in plain view for anybody who wants to see it. Basically, the thing that we've discovered is that you'll have those who are open, and they will finally catch on. In fact, we had one friend of ours at the church we used to go to who said, she said at first, she says, if I didn't know you guys as well as I do, she said, I would have thought you were nuts. But she said, the problem is, every time you bring something up, I'm always finding out that it's true.
There you go.
Which, you know, it's like I tell people, I wish this wasn't true. I don't take pleasure in any of this stuff. God knows, you as well as the rest of us, you don't make money by bringing all this stuff forward. I mean, and we don't either. I mean, there are other things I would much rather be doing than doing the kind of radio show I do on this network and various other things that I do involving this. But the point of the matter is that, as Linda Kennedy has so well put it, I think she's put it probably just about better than any of us, and that is the fact that the blood is on our hands if we don't, if we sit by and watch all this stuff happen and people needlessly be killed or maimed or murdered or tortured in this thing. Now, if we do something and it happens, at least we've done what we can do. But the point of the matter is, if we sit by and do nothing, you know, particularly when we know this is going on, and if we believe in the Creator the way we say we do, then we have to say that we're going to be held accountable if we don't. And that's certainly what has spawned me on. And the bottom line is that as the days go by, I think it's plain for all to see, because we're seeing every day we see something new and outrageous. I mean, and it's all conditioning. The beheading of the guy over in Iraq, I think that that would qualify as certainly a conditioning. And I received an interesting article, Darren, the other day on, and I would put this at this point for storage and nothing more. I don't know if I haven't been able to verify it. This came off of American Patriot Network, and that was the fact that apparently there's some doubt as to whether that video was authentic or not because of where it was uploaded from when it was put up on the net. Now, that's the reason I say just throw that back in your vault for storage, because at this point I don't have any real way of verifying
right.
that. But then also on the Nationalist Times website this weekend, Trish found the same thing up there. So word is getting around, apparently, in some circles that video may have very well been a created hoax. But, you know, there again, whether it was a hoax or whether it was true or not, it certainly plays a good part in conditioning the public to accept that kind of stuff over time.
Well, you're talking about the Iraq video.
Right, the one where the guy was supposedly beheaded and...
Right.
What was his name? Berg. Yeah, his first name is...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my question. You know, I mean, the temptation is to get sucked into everything that they're saying. I mean, because my first feeling when we first started going into Iraq and we started, the bombs first started falling from day one, I was overwhelmed with a feeling of sadness. Whatever you're feeling about Saddam Hussein, and frankly, now the globalists, some of their puppet leaders have actually admitted that the Iraqi people were better off under Saddam Hussein than they are now.
Yeah.
Nita Renfrew, I mention this often, but it's worth taking the time to read. In the Iraq section of the Sweet Liberty website, sweetliberty.org, there's a book by Nita Renfrew who paints a different, completely different picture of Saddam Hussein. I'm not saying that she praises him as a perfect guy either, but it's certainly another side to the man than it's being portrayed in the media. But the point is that these people have been bombed into oblivion.
Yeah.
Our soldiers have gone over there, and they're following orders. They think they're doing the right thing. They're conditioned to believe that they're over there for the purpose of freedom, for the purpose of liberty. And yet, just the very opposite is true. It's remarkable the mind control that's been going on. And continues to go on, and I mean, how can you fight a war thinking that you're fighting it for freedom, and yet you're actually fighting for a new world order, for a socialist one world system?
Well, these people always work in doublespeak because freedom means tyranny and vice versa to them. When they say freedom, it actually is not freedom. When
they,
like say,
when they
for say, for example, look at all the wars they've declared on social problems in this country, and they've only gotten worse. War on drugs, more drugs than ever. War on illiteracy, more illiteracy than ever.
Poverty,
you name it. You can just go right down the list. And I always, as I always tell people, name anything that government has fixed. And most, I haven't found anything. I mean, they can't even run the defense properly now, let alone anything else. And and yet, we've been brought up. In fact, this is one of the things I struggle with on a daily basis, and that is, when I was brought up, I was always taught to trust authority, and I'm sure most all of us out here were as kids growing up. You know, you were always, you sent to school and you're always told, you know, you can trust your teachers, you can trust this person, you can trust that person. About the only person we were told never to trust is a stranger driving in a car somewhere, you know, if they told us to get in the car.
Right.
Well, the problem with that is that one additional thing was not added to that trust authority, and that is the fact that, if you just tell somebody to just trust authority, then that means you'll believe anything they say. And I think today's parents need to refine that just a little bit, because nowadays you can't send Johnny off to school and be sure that Johnny's even... I mean, you can't even be sure that when the kid's sent off to school or whatever, whether it's a girl or a boy or whatever, that they're not going to be fondled by some teacher or any number of things. I mean, we live in a really screwy world now. And part of the problem is that there's a lot of people today, I think a lot of parents who were raised in a totally different time, and far too many of them that don't take the time to really set foot in the schools to see what's really going on. So they send their kids off to school thinking that things are so, you know, are pretty much like they were when they sent them to school. And there's a disconnect there between what's really going on and what the parent may think is really going on. And unless the parents really take time to really investigate, they don't know, and the reason I can say that is because I had a person right next door to me when I lived at my other house before I moved where I am now. She's one of these kind that she would, it was okay for the kids to be sent off all kinds of places, to church, to school, whatever else, just as long as she didn't have to go anywhere. And so the kids pretty much were left to fend for themselves, except when she would finally decide that she wanted them home, and then she'd yell clean across the neighborhood to get their attention. And there's far too many parents that are like that. They have the kids, in the first place, they have them out of wedlock, which, you know, that was a government-created program, which stemmed from the breakdown of morality. I mean, you had all these tax-exempt foundations that helped in that endeavor, the Ford Foundation and various others, undermining life in this country, and then you take it on into the great society that Johnson created, which pulled a lot of the inner city moms on welfare, and then, you know, of course, all that divorce and mayhem spread, you know, once everybody got into the act that was spreading all over, you know, as a result of the great society and these various other tax-exempt foundations, and the first thing you know, there's a total irresponsibility of parents, so the kids are growing up totally left in the hands of the school system or the state or whatever, and then eventually you have kids that believe that the state is the supreme being.
Yep. I can't argue.
It's a real mess we're into, and we got to turn it around somewhere if we're gonna save the country. There's no doubt about it. But well, I'm enjoying what you're doing, Darren. Keep coming in when you can, when Chris has you come on, because you've got a lot of good stuff to present, and I'm going to let you get back to what you're doing. But
well, hey, I appreciate you calling, and you folks, you and Trish, I got my hats off to you. I mean, I got to tell people, if anybody has an excuse, you know, not to become involved, I mean, you folks do. I mean, you've got a something that you have to deal with that certainly is not your fault. You know, and yet you're active and you're in the fight, and I say God bless you, man. I mean, you guys are doing some excellent research, some tremendous research, and you know, I I got to say, you know, if I could reach out and shake your hand, I would.
Well, I'll tell you, the Lord has blessed us in so many ways. I mean, if you would have known us as recently as even as far back as 1996, that was when we got our first computer. And we didn't know anything. I was an avid Rush Limbaugh listener. And I've told that story so many times about how Chris Gerner was the catalyst by which we got started, because I thought I was getting the complete truth. And Chris was on there reading the UN documents. And, of course, Trish was scanning the shortwave bands long before I got into it on the binge of looking up, you know, freedom-oriented radio programs. And she kept telling me, she said, you got to listen to this guy. And kept nagging me about it, which was great. It was a great nag. I'm glad she did. And we one night logged in on the Internet, and, of course, the rest is history. And now, of course, we're working with Chris in whatever way we can to supply information. So, you know, it's once the eyes have been opened, and what I mean that in a more of a spiritual way than anything else, Darren, because, you know, it doesn't matter whether you have sight or not, God has given us all discernment, and you learn. You may get burned a few times, you know, and learning what's true and what isn't true, but with each mistake, if you're smart, you won't make it again, and this is how we've eventually, over time, refined our work that we've done. And of course now, you know, we're out here, you know, working with Chris, and that's just been a godsend, because what we don't have, he's got, and what he doesn't have, we've got. So we're just all here, you know, working together, and that's the key. We got to network those of us that are truly in this for the right reasons. So
that's right. It's important to work together.
You bet. Well, listen, God bless you, and it's great to get a chance to meet you and say hello to you.
Yeah, it's nice being able to talk to you finally.
You bet, absolutely. Lord's blessings,
and your website is theinformationcorner.com, right?
That's right.
And what time is your radio program?
Friday nights between, at the present time, between 9 and 11 p.m. Central, but there's been some talk in the works of maybe moving it, and I don't know what's going to happen there. And then now, in addition to that, we're on a southern network called Dixie Broadcasting, and we're aired over there on Saturdays between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern, which would be 10 to noon Central. And then we're aired again in the evening over there from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, which, of course, would be 7 to 9 Central. So we're aired in three places now.
Oh, wonderful.
So, and that's a pre-recorded delayed broadcast, but it's great because sometimes it's neat getting acquainted with so many people in the deep South there. And I'm telling you, Darren, there is a move afoot in the South. You know, you hear the old saying about the South is rising, and there does seem to be a remnant arising out there in the Southland that truly are non-compromising. They truly want their land back, and they, in addition to wanting their land back, they don't like their heritage being destroyed, and they have got two things to defend against. And it's really been a joy to get to know those people. So there you go.
Absolutely.
All right, I'll let you get to it. You got a break coming, so.
All right, hey man, God bless you, and you hang in there.
All righty, you too now.
Let's hang together so we don't hang separately, right?
Got it, brother.
All right, God bless.
Bye bye.
All right, folks, we got to take a break here coming up. This is American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, sitting in for Chris Gerner tonight. I got a lot more information to share with you tonight. 1-800-858-6582 is the call-in number if you want to make your voice heard. Go to the website, AmericanExpose.com. American spelled with a K and not a C. AmericanExpose.com. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
For the Patriot Trading Group and AllAmericanGold.com, this is Robbie Noel, co-host of the Patriot News Hour. As the founders of the Constitution knew well, for liberty to survive and flourish in a representative government, honest money in the people's hands was an essential part of their vision. Some 230 years later, their wisdom has been validated many times.